We are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs, MP3s, or written transcripts of today's program, Norman Solomon on Can the Democratic Party Live Up to Its Name? Call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977.
Tune in to KABU on Tuesday, June 12th from noon to 8 p.m. for the 20th Annual Homelessness Marathon. Programming includes reports about the fight against poverty for women, youth homelessness, indigenous homelessness, solutions that are working in Finland, and much more. Please call in to talk about your own experiences at 866-LEFT-OUT or 866-533-8688. That's the Homelessness Marathon, Tuesday, June 12th, from noon to 8 p.m., here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock, and coming up next is Air Cascadia. At 10:15 is followed by Flashpoints, and at 11, you'll hear Stage and Studio, where DMA talks to Alina Kim, creator of the POC storytelling series, Invisible Spectrum Stories. And at 11:30, Art Focus welcomes Bruce Gunther to talk about painter R.B. Kitaj, whose show A Jew, Etc., Etc., is now on at the Oregon Jewish Museum. Thanks, KABU members, for your support. To keep informed and get involved, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, June 12th, 2018, and you're listening to KBOO Portland Community Sanctuary Solidarity at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM. Best thing to emerge from the summit, the word Trumpkin, like pumpkin. Also round, orange, and slightly seedy, and mostly vacant. Pulpy also. Let's not forget pulpy, yes. Trumpkin. Not a word, not a peep, not a tweet about human rights. And the fact that Kim Jong-un murdered his half-brother, not to mention millions of North Koreans who are sent to labor camps, never to be seen again. Never, not a word about North Korean people who can't tell the difference between their everyday life and a labor camp. There is none, but for the most part. Free speech is in rock bottom, the worst, although the U.S. seems to be giving it a run for its money these days. The media, from top to bottom in its coverage of this so-called summit, has shown itself to be utterly and completely without any ethics, standards, morals, or ability to discern truth from lies. South Korea, the nation that has stood by the U.S., has participated up until now, of course, in military exercises designed to reassure the Asian nations that the U.S. has got their back and has provided if there is any sense of a community and a commonality in the face of a totalitarian, highly unpredictable nation that has remained. The interesting thing is, pre-summit and post-summit, the North is exactly as closed and secretive, if not more so. More so because now it has a facade to hide behind and the imprimatur of the world's most powerful autocrat, dictator, what have you. This is the saddest part and the most what should be the most alarming part of this whole thing is the fact that U.S. media, the U.S. press, did in no way, shape, or form question anything about the summit. If you want to know what really went on, take a look at English language papers coming out of South Korea. Take a look at pretty much media coming out of any other country. Canada, for example. It was enough to give people heart attacks. This has been the most extraordinary choreography. Absolutely nothing emerged except the fact that two so-called leaders, although who's following is it's hard to tell in both cases, two world what should we call them, actors on the stage, what should we call them, what are we allowed to call them on the U.S. media? I mean, over the air. Sure, there's options. I've got some ideas. In any case, in order to help us deconstruct what I don't even know what to call it. It was definitely not a summit. It was some sort of evil commedia dell'arte performance. Two peacocks strutting past one another, presumably both capable of speaking the same language, but even more capable of speaking past one another. I would say that Kim Jong-un came out well ahead of Trump, but then pretty much any third grader would have come out well ahead of Trump. But this morning we are very fortunate once again to have Christine Hong. She specializes in transnational Asian American and the Korean diaspora and the Pacific Rim, the critical part of the world right now, in comparative ethnic studies at UC Santa Cruz. She has been part of many, many fora, and I don't even know where to begin to list many, many accomplishments. She's been on our show before, and we're happy to welcome back Christine Hong. Good morning.
Thanks,
Christine.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
We're so glad.
Yes, I'm here.
So glad that you could join us today in the aftermath of this so-called summit. I'm sure that there are words in Korean to better describe whatever was that happened. What one thing that didn't happen is any mention of human rights. The fact that Donald Trump appeared to be hoisting Kim Jong-un on his own petard, and not a word regarding the role that South Korean leadership played in this. And what came out of it? Well, less than nothing if you're South Korea. Could you talk a bit about this?
You know, I don't think that it was just a bunch of hot air. I don't think that it was all theatrics. I actually think that this, although it was, you know, sort of slender in terms of delineating steps forward, it actually was consequential, and here's why. North Korea for years has asked the United States for a kind of freeze for a freeze proposal. North Korea has offered to freeze or to suspend its nuclear testing, you know, effectively a moratorium on its nuclear testing, in exchange for the United States freezing or suspending its war exercises with South Korea. And these war exercises are the largest in the world. They simulate the invasion and occupation of North Korea. They simulate a nuclear first strike against North Korea. And they also practice the decapitation of North Korea's leadership. Donald Trump today, and this is a real surprise, no member of any prior U.S. administration has ever suggested that these war exercises, which we can't imagine Cuba doing with Russia off the coast of the United States, no member of any U.S. administration has ever acknowledged that they're provocative. Donald Trump did so today and said that he would be suspending them. And, you know, this most people in every prior administration, including that of Barack Obama, stated these war exercises were simply business as usual. And so what you see here is actually one good faith measure in response to another. So what has North Korea done in the lead up to the summit? Well, it actually it released three prisoners, Korean Americans, who were held for committing unspecified hostile acts in North Korea. The other thing that it did was it actually destroyed its nuclear testing site in Punggye-ri. That's a major, major concession to the United States. It has effectively placed a moratorium on any nuclear testing. There have been no nuclear tests. So basically what the United States has done in a kind of action for action sort of dynamic is it has reciprocated by stating that it will not take part in these highly provocative war exercises. This is a major structural gain. So I think that this is actually a very important moment. And then you also mentioned the issue of human rights. And let's recall about human rights, like we have to understand what the provenance is of the human rights critique of North Korea. This industry consolidated as a right-wing war interventionist industry that renovated a kind of Cold Warrior, like these Cold Warrior institutions, during the George W. Bush era, when he nominated North Korea as part of the Axis of Evil. And these so-called human rights advocates were advocating for a spectrum of securitized solutions that meant basically the collateralization of North Korean lives. They were arguing for fortified sanctions that would harm the North Korean people. They were arguing for even George W. Bush to go to war. And so we have to understand that human rights has been cynically used as a discourse of regime collapse or regime change toward North Korea, and the human rights critique almost never admits what's most crucial, which is that the United States has maintained an unending aggressive war posture against North Korea and perpetrated a war of aggression against North Korea in the middle part of the 20th century. Indeed, you know, I've said on the show before, the statistics speak for themselves. The United States lost something about around like 37,000 military personnel. North Korea, or on the Korean end of things, the casualties were enormous. There's an estimated 4 to 5 million dead, 70% of whom were civilians. North Korea endured a bombing campaign that the Korean War scholar Bruce Cummings at the University of Chicago calls a bombing holocaust. And so, you know, when we're talking about the kind of, however incremental this may seem, however insubstantial this summit may appear to some people, it may seem like cheap theatrics, it actually represents a structural step forward in a kind of freeze for freeze detente which will be essential for any kind of progress going forward. And it's really a source of dismay to me to see even to see Democrats come out as part of the kind of bipartisan war party, you know, pushing for there to be war. Would people prefer there to be fire and fury?
How are Democrats pushing for war? I don't. I think that they think that the Democrats would want this hardened. They would like to see the agreement that resulted from the talks have a bit more substance and a bit more. The words verifiable and some of the language that was waved around, brandished about.
But that is an absolute non-starter for a discussion with North Korea. So that's a way of killing the possibility of any kind of engagement. Let's recall that during Barack Obama's presidency, he maintained a strategic patience posture, which basically translates into non-engagement, absolute non-engagement, radical remilitarization of the Asia-Pacific region with North Korea used as cynical pretext. And then, I can hear the music.
They're trying to signal me to stop. But I really want to hear more from you. If you can join us again very soon, we would really appreciate it. There's a lot more to talk about. More about human rights, and second about security for South Korea and how South Korea is responding to this. Moon Jae-in has been provided crucial leadership in the run-up, and Donald Trump seemed to be loath to acknowledge his efforts there. I want to thank you once again, though, and invite you back in very, very soon. My guest has been Christine Hong. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, June 12, 2018. Engineering for Ray, engineering for us today. Thank you so much. That is Derek Crooks is our AM News.